Come on, let's do it. Michael. Good to see you, Ebony. Okay, that's it. The train's pulling out. JJ's in the back. Hoo-doo, let's go.
Nice.
All right, guys. Once again, my name is Stevie B, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And a proud member of the West Side Men's Group. And it's really, really nice to be here with you guys tonight. And like I was telling some of my guys in the parking lot just before, where we prayed the third step prayer before we come into any meeting, is that this is definitely going to be 100% about him. There's been no preparation tonight other than the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're just leaving it upon God to deliver the message. As my good friend Ernie and one of my mentors says, that I'm just a pipe and definitely not the well. So if he delivers, awesome. And if he doesn't, please don't blame me. Last week we were talking about the fourth step. And we were talking about that once you're at the fourth step, that you've actually made a decision to go on. Of course, we make a decision in the third step, and we talked about being reborn, and we talked about that power. We talked about how when God flows in, and even though we might feel that we're powerless, even though we might feel we're powerless, and we are, we're certainly powerless over drugs and alcohol and anything other things that got us in here, we're certainly not powerless if we've latched on to the power of the universe. So that's what we talked about, latching on to that power, the almighty power. And I'm not one of these guys that you're going to hear talking about a higher power, because I don't believe in a higher power. I'm not saying other people shouldn't believe in a higher power. I just happen to believe in the highest power. Because when I was out there, it's good to see you, little dog. It's good to see you. When I was out there, I wasn't looking for, a half power. I wasn't looking for a light beer. I wasn't looking for a half powder. I wasn't looking for stuff that's been cut 52 times. I was looking for full power. And now that I'm here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want the highest power. So when other people were saying in the big book, it says that you can pick you can choose any power. I decided I wanted to choose the Creator. And what I found out is that the people that wrote this book also agreed with me. Because over 415 times in the first 164 pages, it talks about the Creator, the Almighty, the All-Powerful, the Spirit of the Universe, the Big G, which is God. It talks about the capital H, Him. It doesn't say anywhere in here that I can see that it talks about nature as being the entire force of the universe, or a doorknob, or the door, or my sponsor, or a group of drunks. Although some of you guys are powerful, I just don't want you controlling and running my entire life. Or the universe. So I've decided that I wanted in step three that I was going to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, period, the care of God. Now, did I know exactly what God was at the time? Of course not. Do I know exactly what God is today? I do not. One of the things that I do know is that He does love me and all of us. He is all powerful, and I'm not Him. Those are the three things that I need to know. And more will be revealed. This book says that God will not make hard terms for those that seek Him. Another book that says, seek and you will find. Those two books are exactly aligned on this. That means that God is not looking to hide from us. He's not looking to be an enigma. It's not some secret handshake that only a couple people know, and then if you turn the key and you go to the Vatican, then you know God. It's actually that you seek, you wait, you seek diligently, you do His work well, and then He reveals Himself to us. And you know what? I love that. Because I was always powerless. And I was always looking to fit in, and I was always looking to be the guy in the group that you liked, and I wanted to be liked, and it never happened. Because even if I was that guy in that group, I was always something missing. I had this God-sized hole, this exact God-sized hole. If you look right into my soul, it's perfectly shaped for the Almighty. It's a God-shaped hole. But I decided I wanted to try to put, first, of course, girls in there, and then alcohol, and then drugs, and then more alcohol, and then, of course, more girls. And what it did was, the hole just getting, of course, that was before you, sweetheart. I'm talking about way before my wife, centuries before my wife, even before I knew she was around. I stuffed all that into that hole, and I thought that that would fix it, and momentarily, it seemed like it would fill that hole, and then instantaneously, the hole got bigger. See, the only thing that I could fill today with a God-sized hole is God. You see, when I leave this meeting here tonight, I'm not going to be jonesing for another meeting. I'm not going to be running into the parking lot and saying, Mark, we need to get to another meeting because my God is just rushing out of me. I'm perfectly filled up to the top. And I got to tell you, one of the few places that I do feel that way is in meetings. You know, I asked for a gift of being excited 8 years ago. Because when I first came back, although I was really, I felt blessed to be back. I wasn't excited about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have excitement. I was kind of doing it because I knew that I needed to do it. Kind of like breathing. You know, breathing doesn't excite me. The idea of having oxygen go into my lungs is much more excited than not breathing. Don't get me wrong. But I don't walk out each day and going, woo, I can breathe today. Because I've never been without being able to breathe. So it just comes naturally to me. When I came back into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I knew that I had to go to meetings, I wasn't excited about going to meetings. And then someone said to me my first 6 months, why don't you pray for the excitement of going to meetings? Why don't you pray for the excitement of being back in recovery? And I said, listen, I'm praying for everything else. Why don't I pray for the excitement of being back in meetings? And I don't know when it happened. It happened just shortly after I met you, Todd. I started to get excited, and excitement has never left. You see, it's not a natural go-to for me to do 7 meetings a week that I do. It's not a natural go-to. My natural go-to is to do as little as possible to get by in any program or anything that I'm in, whether it's school, program of Alcoholics Anonymous, work. That's my natural default position. So for me to be at 7 meetings a week and to be on fire about it and actually feel better in the meetings than I do anywhere else in the planet other than church and meetings, and really even in meetings I feel even better than almost any place. Of course, other than home and with my wife. You got to make sure you just continue to make those amends all these years later. Absolutely. And also salsa on Friday nights. We're doing salsa lessons. Yeah, salsa lessons. I just want to give a shout out to my salsa dance team right over there. Before I get on to the I just want to tell you that. One thing that I heard from Ernie Richardson, who happens to be here tonight, is that one of the ways that he makes amends to his wife is that on Friday nights, he has date night with his wife. Now, we had always had an unofficial date night, but when I started to go to this meeting called the Ninth Chapter, who Fred invited me to go to this meeting called the Ninth Chapter, which is to the family afterwards, and I started going there with my wife, I started hearing other people talk about date night. You know, I do meetings almost every day. And sometimes, for my wife, it's not exactly the place that she wants to be all the time. The least thing that I can do to be of service and to be in relationship and to be present and also to make amends at the same time is to have a date night. But usually the date night over the last 8 years consists of me speaking somewhere and my wife coming along with me. And of course, I ask for permission first and she always says yes, but it's really not, still, it's not a date night. So recently, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, you guys invited us to go to salsa night. And I thought at first that was an eating out night, you know, salsa and chips. But it turns out to be dancing, Spanish dancing. And if you're not naturally a great dancer, as I'm naturally not, it's actually something that is way outside my comfort zone. Way outside my comfort zone. I've never been sports inclined ever. When the coach used to say, when I'd be on the line and the coach, they'd do these plays and everybody be running in and out and up and down and they all got the plays. I was just like this big lineman that would go boom. You know, I couldn't really figure out the thing. And that's exactly the way I dance. I'm kind of like this, boom. But reason I'm telling you the story is this. Last night we were at dance class. And I'll get back to the fifth step. Last night we were at dance class. And I told this story this morning when John was there, is that the first 30 minutes of dance class for me, you know, there's only 60 minutes of dance class, and that, I really do want to say thank you, God, for only making dance classes 60 minutes. The first 30 minutes of it is really torturous to me. Because if you're anything like me, I'm fighting the moment I get in. Because I have all these conversations going up in my, I'm not a good dancer, what am I doing here, this is not going to help my program, I can't move left, right, left, and then you get Mark, who's like the best dancer since Dancing with the Stars, and you even feel worse. But here's the thing I learned last night. The moment I was able to turn off my mind and accept where I was, I started to get some moves. I started to get some hip. I started to get the whole thing going on. The moment I was able to turn it off, I was able to turn it on. And I knew I was going to share about it tonight because I realized it was just like the program. When I first came in, and even, it could be on any day. When I'm not willing to surrender to the power, when I wake up in the morning, Ben, and I say, you know what, I'm not going to read page 86 and 87 and 88 today because I'm too busy. I'm not going to read page 86, 87, and 80. I'm too busy. I got a lot of stuff going on. My cell phone's already ringing. As soon as I make a decision that I don't want to start off the day with upon awakening, let me think about the 24 hours a day ahead. As soon as I make that decision, my day already starts getting chaotic. And then I wonder why my day is chaotic. But when I start off my day on my knees, page 86, 87, 88, upon awakening, let me think about the 24 hours a day ahead. It all starts to fall into place, and I seem much less busy than I was just a couple minutes ago. So that's my salsa story. That's my surrender story. That's my doing what you don't want to do anyway story. Because it turns out, now that I'm seeing this whole picture, that salsa could be much bigger than just the dance. It's actually, for me, a picture of everything in my life. You know, that I want to be able to control all the different facets. And when it comes to dancing, and if you don't know how to dance, you really can't control anything. You just have to follow that 1, 2, 3. And then I realized there was 12 steps, and I was almost like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I realized, just like the program, you got to follow the steps. I don't know if you can get anything out of that. It is plain that a life which concludes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. That's what we discussed last week. Then I alluded to talking about fear. And I would tell you, and I'm going to go back to this only one more time. Dancing is a major fear for me. My wife happens to be a professional dancer. When I met her, she was on stage. And she was an unbelievable National Columbian Ballet and just, you know, just a swan. You know, it's just amazing watching her. But she always used to say to me, come with me, you know, get on stage. I'm not getting on stage. So I spent a lot of time myself watching her and cheering her on. I found that that's a big fear of mine. And in the fourth step, which for people that did the fourth step, is one of the big categories that we didn't speak about last week is fear. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because if you don't put down your fear and you don't actually turn the fears over, you can be paralyzed with stuff you're afraid of. You see, I know that dancing is a big fear of mine. So it's important that I do it. I also know that public speaking was a huge fear of mine. When I first came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I saw that we were going to have to speak in front of entire rooms of people, I had anxiety. As a matter of fact, even tonight, this is not a natural go-to for me. It always takes a higher power. It always takes something for me that's a beyond myself. It always takes me turning my life and my will over. But because fear of speaking in public places, it was prevalent for me, I needed to write it down. Because fear of being in a committed relationship was one of the big things in my life, I needed to write it down. Because fear of other men and fear of all these other things, I needed to write them down. I didn't talk about that last week, but I don't want you to think that just because it says resentment is the number one offender and that we talked a lot about sex last week, that fear is not as important. Because fear is huge. All four categories are huge. Harms caused to others. Fear, sex, which I call sex harmed others, because I've been in a lot of fifth steps where it's just a sexual, you know, people just writing down stuff that doesn't need to be on there. It's harms you've caused in your sex. And of course, there was four categories. Sex, resentments, fears, and harms caused to others. Now that we covered that, I want to get right into what the fifth step is all about. Well, let me just read this one paragraph. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Was it because of self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was as good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't, you know, I was telling the guys last night, when I was out there, when I relapsed after having 6, 7 years of not having booze in my system, and I relapsed, during that time of relapse, when I used to be drunk in Hollywood, I thought I was a great singer. You know, while I was drinking and taking narcotics, I thought that I was a great singer. My ears had adjusted, and my friend Nikki D and I used to go around to bars, and we used to look for karaoke. I thought I was a fantastic singer, Dice. I really did. And the more pills and the more booze I did, the better I thought I was. And so what I would do is I would go around to these places and pay the karaoke guys like $400 or $500 and take the entire night for me and my friend. You know, just us. You know, I mean, here's four. That's how good I thought I was. And when I sobered up, there was a karaoke machine in our mall. And there, it was, but it wasn't just a machine. It was like you can go and tape yourself. You go into these booths and you go to tape yourself. So here I am. I'm sober a couple months. I'm back. Maybe a year. I was allowed to be back in the store. And I'm over there at the store. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to make my wife a tape, a CD for our anniversary. And I go in there and I tell the... And I hadn't sung in sobriety this time around. So I went in there and I plugged myself into the... to the CD, and I picked out You Lost That Love and Feeling, and that was a big song for me when I was in the bars over here in Hollywood, and I plugged that thing in, and I just gave it, You Lost That Love and Feeling, and I got the CD, and I'm to Sandy, and we, you know, we listened to it. Yeah. Some of us at one time had great confidence, but it didn't fully solve our fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way, we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him. He does enable us to match calamity with serenity. Frankie, good to see you, baby.
Have a blessed night.
You too, my brother. I want you guys to hear this next paragraph. It's only one of the top five most important paragraphs in the entire big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We laugh at those who think spirituality as the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of all ages is that faith means courage. All men and women of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Let me just back that line up for a second. Just come right back up here. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us of what He can do. We asked Him to remove our fear. That's what I wanted you to hear about fear, guys. We don't try to take fear. Our sponsor's not going to take away fear. Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help take away fear, but it's never going to take away fear. The fears you come in with is the fears you'll leave, unless of this one line. We asked Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us to be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. That's a great line, isn't it, Patrick? At once, we commence to outgrow fear. I mean, for me, that was such a weight off my chest because I'm so fear-based and I had so many fears and so many hang-ups and so many deals when I came in here and still when I was in here. One of the reasons that I drank again after all those years is because I was still fear-based because I never saw that line nor did I ever think that it was going to happen that way to have Him remove our fears. That I thought it was something that happens over time. Like maybe after 20 years or 30 years. Let me tell you something. I know guys with 45 years that are completely, to this day, fear-based. If they don't have a meeting that goes on exactly the way they want it, and they sit in exactly that chair, and they have exactly that doctrine, and they speak exactly the same way for 45 years, they're totally fear-based. I thought I was going to just outgrow my fear. I never outgrew my fear. It actually got worse inside Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have overwhelming fear because I drank. I drank because I had overwhelming fear. You hear what I said? I drank because I had overwhelming fear. So as I started going on Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to see the fear was still there. I mean, who wants to be sober and fearful? Who wants to be petrified and sober? I certainly don't. So then it says we turn it over to him, and he removes it from us. It says at once, he commences to remove it from us. Amen. That's a good line right there. Let's get to the fifth step. Having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? If you wrote down all your deal, and you wrote down your harms, and your sex harms, and your resentments, and your fears, what are you going to do with it? Just writing it down is not enough. You're going to go through the list. Mrs. Brown, what you did to Mrs. Brown didn't do anything, but what other things did to me. And you're going to write it all down. And that's the first part. I mean, last week I spoke to you about going into the closet in your house and having the things in the closet and then really not knowing exactly what needs to come out of the closet, but just writing down an entire inventory of everything that's in the closet so that we can go to a sponsor, a mentor, a rabbi, a priest, someone that knows what we're doing here in terms of confession, about getting it out, and then having that person to help us to remove some of that. Now, of course, the ultimate authority in removing some of that is God. But we're not going to know what to remove from that. We're not going to know what to remove if it's all up to us. The reason that it doesn't say in the fifth step that we turn it over to, that we made it, excuse me. What is the fifth step? That we admit it to God and to ourselves, period. Although that a lot of people think that that's all they need, that I'm going to admit it to God and to myself. The reason it doesn't say that is because some of the stuff that we're admitting, we don't even know we have. See, we need to admit to our God, to ourselves, and to another human being, because the other human being, hopefully, is going to have the experience to know when you're holding something back. You see, I remember when I was in California and I was giving my fifth step to my sponsor, Jerry, and Jerry says to me, is that it? Every sponsor is going to ask you that question. You done? Where's Michael? Is that it? That's it? And you know that's not it. I mean, you know that there's the one thing that you're holding back. It should have been on all four of the columns. Maybe not resentment, but definitely is in there. And then your sponsor says to you, is that it? And then you say, absolutely. And you close the book. Like, closing the book is going to prove your point. Like, you never lied before, even though you just shared your fourth step with your sponsor. So obviously he knows you're a liar. And then you just close that book. You're like, absolutely. And then your sponsor says to you, how do you feel? And then you say, you know, maybe there's one more thing I wanted to mention to you. There's one more thing. See, when you leave the fifth step, I spoke to a young lady tonight that said she did the fifth step today. You're going to have a different type of walk. If you really did the fourth step and you searching and fearless moral inventory and you put it all down as best as your ability, I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, but you don't intentionally omit something. Intentionally omit something is you know you did something and you don't put it down specifically because you're not going to share it. And you don't intentionally omit something, you walk out of there, you have a new freedom and a new happiness. It's not the new freedom and the new happiness that they talk about in step 9 before we're halfway through, but it's certainly a new freedom and a new happiness that we had that before the fifth step. It's certainly going to be something that we did before we came onto that mountain. We're going to be like, wow, that was unbelievable. You just laid it down, your sponsor or whoever's doing it with you is talking about it with you, and you just feel fantastic. If you don't feel fantastic or you don't feel completely, totally drained, then something has been omitted. Let me go back here. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult because we've been hiding this for so long. We don't even know what this defect is. A lot of us are in so much denial. What did we hear today, John? What was that denial? What was that term that we heard in the meeting, denial?
The river in Egypt.
No, it was better. It was better than that. Don't even know I'm lying. That was a good one. Don't even know I'm lying. And you know what? I'm not even saying we're lying. Sometimes we're in so much denial of the stuff that we have carried in here that if you're anything like me, I came in here specifically for a drug, let me rephrase that, an alcohol problem. I came in here specifically for an alcohol problem, whether it's hard alcohol, whatever. I came in because I had a problem with substance. I didn't come in here because I had a whole bunch of personal defects. I really didn't even think that was in the top 15 things of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then all of a sudden I see all this thing here that says that we have defects and we got it. What defects? Only defects I had is that I used substances. I thought this was a totally unnecessary step. And when I did the fifth step the first time around, I did it exactly like that. I kind of wrote down everything that had to do with drugs and alcohol. What I found out this time is that drugs and alcohol is just a symptom, but of the problem. It's just a symptom. The reason I use drugs and alcohol, and I say drugs and alcohol, I'm probably supposed to only say alcohol, but you know what? What can I tell you? I did alcohol and super alcohol and every other alcohol that there was, and you know that's just my story. I grew up in the '80s and I relapsed in the '90s. So you know what can I tell you? And you guys invented some stuff out there that I thought I would never try. I didn't even know it was invented. So thanks, young people, for doing that. I appreciate it. I feel better about getting that off my chest. You know. The fifth step is all about just bearing your soul. So I'm sitting down with Jerry. Jerry says to me, come out to California. I want to do a fifth step with you. So I go out to California to see our friend Jerry. On my way there, my best friend dies. While I'm sitting in Houston, Todd got me tickets to go out there. I used to live with Todd, and his dad got me tickets to go out to California. And while I'm in Houston, where Todd is from, and the plane is landed, I get a call for me to call back immediately back to Fort Lauderdale. And I called back immediately to Fort Lauderdale, and I go, what's up? And they said to me, Danny died this morning. I can't believe it. Danny had 14 years of recovery, and he had died from a stomach surgery. I'm devastated. I never experienced anything like this. I got 6 months of sobriety. I'm on a plane. Hey, you know, they got me first-class tickets because his dad works in the airplane industry. The guy comes over to me, the flight attendant comes over to me, and he says, sir, and I'm not sniveling. I'm like crying. I'm like, the day before, Danny had called me and said, he had called me, and I looked at the caller ID, and I didn't pick up the phone. And the next day, he's dead. And I'm crying. And I'm weeping. And the guy says to me, can I get you a drink? And at that moment, you know, I'm going to tell you something. I thought of taking a drink. I was so devastated. You know, I'm not one of these cool. You know, I think of myself as a tough guy, but I'm not. I'm the most sensitive man you could possibly meet. I just did this thing because my wife and I are adopting a baby. It's called MMPI. It's 550 questions that are ridiculous. You know, she says to me. She says to me, Ernie. She goes like this to me. You know, you'll find another area. It's just you're extremely sensitive. I said, what do you mean by that? I'm extremely sensitive. When I found out that Danny died, I was weeping. And they said to me, would you like to have a drink? And I thought to myself, I absolutely do want to have a drink. But I called my sponsor in California, and I called my sponsor back here. I got Russell on the phone, and I got Jerry Bear on the phone, and I said, listen, Danny just died. And Jerry said to me, you don't honor your friend's death in recovery by drinking. You don't honor him by drinking. You know, if it's not for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my natural default mechanism is to drink and to hide the pain and to cover the pain. That's what I do here. But what you guys have taught me is that in these specific situations that are above and beyond things that you can ever possibly imagine, you reach out. And I reached out. And I got over there to California, and it was a men's retreat, and I was, you know, all broken up. Jerry, you know, be me. And the next day, Jerry says to me, we're going to do the fifth step. And Jerry knows that I'm a Christian, even though I come from a half-Jewish, half-Christian home, and Jerry's Jewish, but Jerry respects my belief. You see, I wanted to just tell you something. I just want to throw this out here. Anything you think that you have to have a certain Christian sponsor or a Jewish sponsor or you can't, that has nothing to do with it. What you do need to have is a person that understands the program of Alcoholics Anonymous if you're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And your sponsor has to respect what your belief system is. You see, my sponsor respects what my belief system is, and I respect what his belief system is. And we respect each other. And when it comes to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, what he says goes. So he says to me, Steve, I'm going to take you up to the cross on the mountain, and tomorrow we're going to do the fifth step. and I see this cross up on the mountain. And I think to myself, this is going to be some fifth step. I mean, in the foot of the cross, it's going to be unbelievable. But somehow, Jerry didn't ever take me to the cross. The next day, he goes like this. We're going to come back to the cross. But right now, we're going to go to this incredible place on the Pacific Coast Highway, right, Kayla? The Pacific Coast Highway. We're going to drive you down the Pacific Coast Highway. You've never seen anything like it. And we're going to go down to the beach, and it's going to be amazing. The waves crash, and God is going to be there. It's going to be awesome. But we went the wrong day. We went the wrong way. We couldn't make it to Pacific Coast Highway because he went the wrong direction. So we wound up in a town where they were having a rodeo. They were having this rodeo inside the town. And Jerry says to me, stop the car. It was a rental car. He goes, stop the car. Now, we were on a little piece of grass that big that was inside in the middle of a little town where people were walking by and getting, like, drinks and coffee and with hats, rodeo hats. And he goes to me, stop the car. And I go, okay. And he goes, take the chairs out of the back. We're going to do the fifth step right here. And he puts me on the side of the road, right, where, like, people are walking by. And I'm, like, baring my soul. I'm starting to tell him stuff that I would never tell anybody in my entire life. And people walking by with their dogs and girls. You know, the reason I tell you this story is there is no perfect fifth step. All you have to do is just do it. I envisioned me up on the mountain and the cross and the clouds. And when I was done, the hallelujah, I thought, ah! I got nothing. Nothing. Matter of fact, my sponsor got so bored in the middle of my fifth step, he fell asleep at one point. Which you know Jerry does. He falls asleep. He falls asleep at one point. Right when I was getting into the best parts of my sexual harms done to others, he falls asleep. I couldn't believe it. He says, you know what, pick up the chairs. And we wound up doing it in two other places. I tell you all that because you got to have very low expectations. You got to have very low expectations of how it's going to come out. But you just have to do it. Sometimes it is the hallelujah chorus. Sometimes it is the perfect day and the perfect place. Where's Doug? We've been to some good places when we did the fifth step, and I take my guys to some good places, but it ain't the best. You know, it's not like, you know, up on top of the mountain. It's a park by my house. And we do the best we can, and we share each other. But here's the great thing I want to tell you about what happened with Jerry. I was done. The third place he brought me to, three places he brings me to that day. The third place was nice. It was this little lake. And things were going good. And I closed the book. And we're walking away. And I got the chairs. And I go, that was great, Jerry. Thanks so much. And he sees that I'm not free. He sees that I'm not happy, joyous, and free. I'm kind of like free with a limp. I'm like, that was great, Jerry. Thanks so much. I really appreciate that. That was great, Jerry. And he says to me, come back here, Stevie. Put the chairs down. I go, oh, no. He goes, what did you omit? I said, well, I'm still doing this one behavior. It's not bad. You know, I really don't think it has anything to do with drinking. I don't feel that it's robbing me spiritually. He goes, well, what is that behavior? And let's just say I had something hidden in the house, and my wife didn't know about it. And he says to me, oh, no. When you get back to Fort Lauderdale, you stop that behavior. As a matter of fact, right now, right here, you just understand that it's between you, me, and God, and that behavior is done. That's the way he talks. He's like, that behavior is done. You know what? If it was me having done my personal inventory and just sharing it with God, I thought I was done. You understand? Why you share it with another human being? I thought I was done. I'm like, we're good. You know, like Spike said, we're good. Me and you, God, we're good. No, we're not good. I needed another human being to say to me, you're not good. That's not the way we act in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're doing spiritual in all our affairs. That's not in all our affairs. And I was like, wow, thank you so much. When I walked away from that little river that day, bam, I closed that door. Bing, I was like this. Woo! And I felt like I had a new freedom and a new happiness. And to the best of my ability and everything that I could have seen, I had shared everything. I had omitted nothing. I had not making mortar without sand in that whole thing. However that thing goes, I had not made those bricks without the stuff that you're supposed to make it. I made those bricks solid. And I built the foundation. And guess what happens if you haven't admitted anything? You get rocketed to the next part of the next step. And in 6 and 7 is where all the juice happens. You see, let me tell you something about what's going to happen. You can't get to 6 and 7 carrying a whole bunch of luggage. And if you come back here to this clubhouse and you come here about 6 and 7, I'm going to tell you about 6 and 7 like maybe nobody's ever told you. A couple guys But maybe not. This is not a. The way that I talk about 6 and 7 is not like run of the mill 6 and 7. I talk about 6 and 7 like step 6 and 7, for you guys who don't know what I'm talking about. It's not this dance move, it's step 6 and 7. It's the two steps that come right after this. That changed my life. But how I got to step 6 and 7 was finally doing a thorough fifth step. Let me read this paragraph to you. You're going to love this. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time. Now remember, last week I spoke to you and I said the last time we heard something like that was in the third step. It never says in the fourth step, if we don't do a perfect fourth step, we're going to drink. It talks about in step three that if we don't have a great third step, we're going to drink. And then it skips over to step five. And it says specifically in step five, time after time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, what's the next line? They got drunk. Anybody in here want to get drunk?
No.
Well, some of you are nodding out tonight, so I'm not even sure if you're sober. But if you are sober, you don't want to get drunk. So that's all forms of alcohol. That's pills, everything, guys. Wake up. Clean and sober, exactly. You want to get drunk? I don't want to get drunk. My life was so bad I couldn't even possibly imagine. So if it says to me in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program which I'm following, the program which I'm in, that if we don't unveil every nook and cranny, if we don't reveal every darkness of our past, that invariably we get drunk, guess what? I'm paying attention. Because I've already invariably gotten drunk once before. And invariably it was awful. You know, invariably my wife served me with a restraining order. Invariably, I was locked up with 6 felony charges. Invariably, I was on 6 different types of psychotic medication when I came back. Invariably, I was on probation for a year. Invariably, I gave my freedom away. Invariably, I couldn't stay sober. So you guess what? Listen to this line. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. I don't want to invariably ever get drunk again. And I don't want to invariably ever wear pink slippers again. I want to invariably stay sober. So I am going to make sure that I reveal everything possible to my sponsor. And since I do a lot of steps and I do a lot of stuff out in the public, I invariably tell you guys a lot of my stuff. A lot of my stuff. And you know why? Because I believe that a searching and fearless moral inventory, I'm not talking about really deep-seated, dark secrets that I'm going to come up here and do my fifth step, but when I misbehave, and if I'm speaking in front of a group, and my wife's in the meeting, and I misbehave that day, I just confess it. I'm like, listen, I wasn't good today. I wasn't so wonderfully nice to my wife, and I apologize right there on the spot. I want to make sure that invariably I never get high again. Amen? Yeah. I mean, this is that serious. It's that serious. And then the next line is, we think the reason is that we never completed the house cleaning. We think the reason that those people got drunk is that they never completed the house cleaning. Trust God, clean house, help others. You guys with me on that? Trust God, clean house, help others. You don't have a clean house, you can't do the other two. Excuse me, you don't have a clean house, you didn't do the first one to begin with. Because if you trust God, you can't wait to get to 4 and 5. Let me dump that garbage. Boom. Woo. You don't be walking around like this. You don't be walking around like that. And let me tell you something. Length of time of sobriety does not mean that those guys or gals with this long-term sobriety have dumped their garbage. Listen, time means a lot. For you guys that have all this time, awesome. I can't wait to get there someday, one day at a time. But some of you guys stink so bad, not in this room because this is higher echelon sobriety, but some of these guys with all this time, I want to have one thing of that they got. Because they're still carrying around all this baggage, all this garbage, all this stuff that should be given to God. You with me?
Yes.
All right, good. I like this group. I hope you invite me back for the sixth step. So Jerry says to me, are we done? I said, we certainly are. He pulls out the book and he says, we pocket our pride and we go to it. Illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. Anybody in here take the fifth step? Raise your hand. Put it down. Anybody, when you were done with the fifth step, you felt delighted? I certainly did. I felt delighted for two reasons. Because everybody was always asking me, forever, did you do the fifth step? Did you do the fourth step? And it was such like the sticking point in my side. It was a thorn in my side for so many years because my sponsor, Myron, before I relapsed, every little problem that I ever had with Sandra, with my car, with my stomach, with my job, was because I didn't do the fifth step. He was always like, that's because you didn't do the fifth step. I'm like, Jerry, my car's not working. That's because you didn't do the fifth step. I said, yeah, but I don't have an internet connection at the store. He goes, yeah, that's because you didn't do the fifth step. So just that alone was I felt delighted just to be able to say I did the fifth step. Next point, I felt delighted because I had a huge weight that was lifted off my shoulders and a huge weight that came off my chest. You know what I found out by doing it with my sponsor? My stuff was not all that unique. It wasn't even, you know what? Jerry fell asleep in my sexual caused others. I thought for sure that was going to be like, wait a minute, here we go. What are you talking about? Slow it down. He was like this. Now you know. That's embarrassing. First of all, it's embarrassing because I wasn't even exciting enough to stay awake for it. And second of all, it was such a great feeling to know my stuff is no different than your stuff. You know what I mean? My stuff is no different than your stuff. It's exactly the same, change a few names. My fears are no different than your fears. Same fears, change a few of the fears. My harms caused others. Maybe some of yours is a little bit different because we're from New York, but other than that, everything's good. Because, you know, we grow up like all wacky. And my resentments was no different than Jerry's resentments. Just a couple names have been changed. And when I left that fifth step, I really did feel new freedom and a new happiness. And here's the thing that I told this young lady tonight. For some reason, oh, there, she's right there. There's something else that I want to tell you. When you do the fifth step and it's finished, you know you're really in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because nobody does a fourth and fifth if you're not in. Nobody. If you're kind of halfway in, you just skip right past that step. You go right to 12. You kind of do 3 to 12. You go right there. But if you're in, you do the fourth and fifth, and you're really in. And so you kind of know it. It's kind of like where the metal meets the road. And you say, you know what? Is it metal meets the road?
Rubber.
Yeah, right, exactly what I said. That's where the rubber meets the road. Or in some of your cases, the metal meets the road. And you know you're in. And then, the big book is very exciting because it says at once, we get started onto step 6. Now, if you haven't seen the power of God in your life, if you're still walking around with all those defects of character, if you're just sober, if you're still doing the same things you did when you were drinking, Harvey, and whenever you're ready. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Well, it's okay.
I don't know. It's a good song.
It's a good tune. It was a good tune, Harvey. Thank you. I appreciate that. This is my table from the 70s right up here, guys.
60s.
Listen, we're almost done. I want you to hear this. If you're still being bogged down with the same defects of character you had while you were drinking or before you came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're still doing the same sin that you don't think anybody knows about, and I could say sin because it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 13. If you're still doing the same stuff you did before you came in, if you're still feeling dirty about yourself just like you did, if you've created so much wreckage in your present after you've done the fifth step, here's the good news. You just don't know the power of 6 and 7. I want you to have a good spirit about you because I'm going to illuminate for you or reintroduce you back to the power of 6 and 7. You see, we think just because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that it's only two paragraphs that it's not important. It's actually the step that separates the men from the boys and the girls from the women. It's actually the thing that gets you closer to the Creator. You see, all these steps, 1 through 12, are all enabling you to clear away the wreckage, to get cleaned up inside, to clear away the windows that are all covered with the garbage, so what? So the sunlight of the Spirit can see through. We come in here and we got all this stuff on the windows that we've been piling up. We got the shutters closed. We got the drapes closed. We got the peephole closed. We got everything closed. And then we come in Alcoholics Anonymous and one layer comes out. Boom, just the shades, but the shutters are still on. And then after a little while, the shutters are still on, but all the black stuff is still on the windows. And in the fifth step, we get a Windex, and our sponsor gets paper towels, and we start cleaning it, but it's still dirty. You see, up until that point, we're just identifying what it all is. But in 6 and 7, we get the master window cleaner out. And by the time you're into 7, that sunlight is coming in so bitch, you gotta wear shades. Thanks for letting me share.